Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Lightning fans, you found the right show for everything you need to know about your favorite team in the NHL. It's the Lightning Insider Podcast with Eric Erlandson. Get ready for insight, historical perspective, interviews, and breaking news that comes from a reporter insider who's got near 20 years on the Tampa Bay Lightning beat. Now for the latest with the Lightning, here's Eric.
Hello, everyone, and welcome again to another edition of the Lightning Insider Podcast. I am Eric Rowlandson from LightningInsider.com, your host, and we're going to recap Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Dallas Stars, and Tampa Bay wins the game by a score of 3-2. They even up the series at one game apiece. Game 3 will be on a Wednesday at 8 p.m., and of course, what this win does tonight, other than tie up the series and make it now a best-of-five series since they're at a game apiece, the back-to-backs will now take place. Since we are guaranteed now at least a game five, the Friday-Saturday back-to-backs are now in play. So keep that in mind as we get closer to the weekend, that Friday and Saturday back-to-back nights are going to be difficult for a lot of people, I think, to watch the game, stay up late for the games back-to-back. But in particular, yours truly, who stays up, of course, late after games to get all the podcasts and the writing and everything else done. So it'll be a deep into the night weekend here for the old Lightning Insider. All right, some of the things we're going to get to, of course, first and foremost, is the result of the game and how it got to the result. We like to do that here. We like to kind of break things down a little bit so it's not results matter, and of course they matter. They're paramount. But how did you get to the results? So we're going to talk about that. I got a little trivia question for you a little bit later in the show as well. Again, another T-shirt we're going to give away, courtesy of Smack Apparel. Those were those blue party like it's 2004 shirts. Got a couple more that we can give away, courtesy of Smack Apparel. So check out the trivia question, and I'll tell you how to answer it and how to get me the answer and get into the giveaway a little bit later in the show. Of course, we take your questions as well. But let's start with, well, the start. As we know, the start in Game 1 was not very good for Tampa Bay. The legs were not there. The mind was not there. And when you don't have the mind, your legs can't go. If you don't have your legs, your mind can get them going. But if you're going to be slow to react with your head, then you're going to have a very difficult time when it comes to getting your game going. And I think that was exactly a result from the first game, and that's how you got to that result. So you knew Tampa Bay was going to be much better prepared to come out and start this game on time, so to speak, as opposed to Game 1, and that's exactly what we got. They came out aggressive. They came out strong. They came out putting pucks in deep. They got the cycle game going. They put Dallas back on their heels. And that really, really created a lot of momentum. The power plays that they did draw in that period, they earned them. They earned them because they had Dallas under pressure. Now, Dallas put themselves in a couple of silly situations to take those penalties. And we'll get into some of that a little bit as well. But, you know, you draw a penalty 3:20 into the game on a high sticking call. You draw a penalty at 10:58 from Joel Pavelski, a tripping call. And then Jamie Oleksiak, for whatever reason, grabbed Tyler Johnson by the shoulder in the neutral zone, pulls him down, ends up being a holding call. And for all the talk about the power play and the struggles that it had, because it was 0-14 coming in, it's really struggled throughout most of this postseason, to be honest with you. And the numbers are going to be skewed because they had 8 power play goals, not counting the round robin, so just playoff games. They had 8 power play goals in the playoffs. 6 of those came in 2 games. They came in the 7-1 victory against the Bruins in game 3 of that series. And then they had 3 in game 1 against the Islanders in the Eastern Conference Finals. So beyond that, they only had 2 power play goals in the other 15 games. So you have to take advantage of these opportunities. They didn't do it in game 1. It almost cost them in some aspects in the series against the Islanders because, you know, they had those 2 4-minute power plays at the end of regulation that carried themselves over into the overtime period and didn't capitalize on it, ended up losing the double overtime game in game 5, and then actually did win it in game 6. So they did kind of survive that, but you can't necessarily survive that for too long. Certainly it's not the end-all be-all, and we've seen teams with power plays that were less than ideal actually go on to win the cup. But you have to be a threat. You have to be able to score, or else teams are going to take liberties against you because they don't respect or fear your power play. And in some ways, maybe that's a little bit of what Dallas was trying to do because they knew that they were in a rut. So they came out with a physical tone. You know, they tried to run Tampa Bay out. You know, we saw certainly that in the first period or the first game with that. And I think Dallas tried to do it again today. But, you know, the Lightning made them pay, and I think that was huge for obvious reasons, you know, to make them pay for it. And this is what I liked about the power play tonight. They gave different looks. It's the same, it's a lot of the same personnel, right? Like you had the first power play unit for Tampa Bay. Alex Killorn was back on it. That's one of the different looks they gave to it. So Killorn's back on it, but you still have Palat and Point and Kucherov. But here's the key. Victor Hedman was the only guy on defense running the point. So we have seen, of course, Mikhail Sergachev out there with Hedman running the point on the top power play unit. We've seen it moved around on more than a few occasions during this postseason. But tonight it was just Victor Hedman. Took a little bit longer than I thought it should have to get back to this situation, but it was, and it paid off. Now, it necessarily wasn't because Hedman was out there, but this is what they did. We've seen Andre Palat move around a little bit throughout the power plays here, and he spent some time on the right circle. He spent some time in the left circle. He spent some time, you know, as a net fronts down low. They tried to run the Brad Marchand play a couple of times with him at the low post against the Islanders. So he sets up in the Stamkos circle, if you will, you know, the left circle over there. And because of the brilliance of Nikita Kucherov, makes this all work, right? First of all, they were moving the puck well. They were able to get in somewhat consistently. They were able to set up, and that's the key. It's the key for any power play. If you can set up, you're going to have opportunities. But the passing was just so much crisper with this setup. And I think a lot of that is because, you know, Victor Hedman ran this power play for a good portion of the year as the guy. So there's a comfort level with him as the only trigger man, if you will, at the center point there. So he understands where Nikita Kucherov is going to be. A little different, obviously, with a left-handed shot over on that circle as opposed to a right-handed shot. It's a different feel for how Victor would get a pass over in that situation. You know, he's not setting up a righty shot for a one-timer. But this is what they did. So we haven't seen them a lot. Let's try and work these down low plays on the power play. We've seen a lot of passing around the perimeter from Kucherov, Hedman, or Sergachev, who happen to be there sort of in that umbrella area, if you will, and try and make things work there. Settled for a lot of shots on the outside, Well, you saw Alex Killorn down low try and make a power move early on in this power play. Didn't result in a goal, but again, gives the opposition at least something to think about. And then that bumper play. Like, this bumper play was a huge part of who they were last year in particular. Braden Point led the league with 20 power play goals, and he got so many of them from that bumper spot. Well, they've kind of taken that away a little bit because there's so much focus on Kucherov, and everybody knows that the puck is going to try and be funneled through him, make things work through him. But to open up some of the seams and some of the passing lanes for him, you got to get the penalty killers moving, but you also got to get them thinking about the other options that are out there. So you get a quick pass over to Kucherov, who's able to quickly feed Braden Point in the bumper spot, and he doesn't quite get all of the shot, but he gets enough of it, and he puts it in a good area to score the opening goal that came at 11:23. You know, that came off of the Pavelski tripping call. You know, so now all of a sudden Dallas has to understand that that play is there. Not that they're not aware of it, but Tampa Bay hasn't gone to it much here in the playoffs. And then on the second power play goal, again, good puck movement, good moving stuff around. And when you do that, you know, when there's a respect factor, because if you look at the way Dallas killed that penalty, Braden Point's in the same spot, but because he's already scored earlier in the game from that area, guess what happens? Dallas now has to respect it, so when Kucherov gets the puck, they go to Point. And when that happens, it opened up a seam for Kucherov to get the puck across the ice, get it to Palat. It's not a one-timer because he is a left-handed shot, but he has more than enough time to be able to corral the puck and get a good hard slapper, a short slap shot into the open side of the net, and Anton Khudobin is not able to get over there. So now all of a sudden you have a 2-0 lead. So this is what makes the Lightning power play dangerous when it's all healthy, when it's Steven Stamkos over there at the left circle, because you have to respect both sides of the ice. You can't say that teams throughout this playoffs have respected both sides of the ice. They've keyed so much on Kucherov, and he's still come through. He has still delivered for the most part. But when he's able to find some open space, he can make plays like he did tonight. And look, it was a rough first period for him. You know, he took the high sticking call from Janmark 3 minutes into the game. This was just after he was leveled by Jamie Benn. I'll get into that in a minute because there's more than a couple of questions regarding that. But he's leveled by Jamie Benn. He's in on a back check. He kind of stumbles and goes hard into the wall. And he left the ice for a little bit. And everybody was like, oh, no, there's too many injuries on this team already. Well, he admitted after the game that he left because his visor had come loose. So he didn't leave for an injury situation. He left for an equipment issue. And came back pretty quickly. So no concern on the injury front with him. But, you know, this is what he did. You know, so he takes those hits and he comes back and he makes a couple of brilliant plays on the power play. And he puts Tampa Bay up 2-0. He's a big part of the reason they're up 2-0 with two primary assists. And with those assists tonight, he does become the Lightning's all-time single season point producer. With a franchise record, it breaks the record held by Brad Richards. And he is also, if you zero in on what he's done, you know, he's got 27 points now. The record was 26 that was set by Brad Richards, of course, in the run to 2004 when he picked up the Conn Smythe Trophy. So he's now the all-time single-season point leader. So again, all kinds of franchise records, playoff records that Kucherov now holds. Another big part of it tonight. Braden Point's goal, by the way, was his 10th of the playoffs. The record, by the way, is 13 in a playoff season. That's held by Tyler Johnson in 2015. So again, just a big night from Nikita Kucherov. And the first period, and then Kevin Shattenkirk makes it 3-0 a little bit later on to give Tampa Bay a pretty good cushion after the first period. That goal comes at the 15-16 mark, so a little over a minute after Palat's goal. Shattenkirk makes it 3-0 with a shot from the right point that found its way through some traffic, and you know, it's exactly, if you're the Lightning, you could not have scripted the start any better. You end up shooting Dallas in the first period, 14-6. As you know, we like to look at shot attempts as well. So the shot attempts were 20-15 in favor of Tampa Bay. So Dallas was able to block a number of shots. But again, it's what you want the Lightning to be. You want them to be a possession team. You know, the high danger chances, they were 8-4. Don't like giving up the four, but you had more than double the amount of high danger chances than scoring chances were, 11-5. So again, pretty good scripted first period. Not so much in the second, and a little bit of undisciplined play. Look, you know Dallas is going to push. They're down 3-0. They've erased multi-goal deficits before here in these playoffs. You know, they were down, what were they, down 3-0 to Calgary early on in the opening round and came back to win that game. I think they scored 6 straight goals to win that game against Calgary. So they have it in them, and we've seen in today's NHL that no lead is necessarily safe. So you have to respect that and understand that Dallas is going to come out. And you also have to understand, and I hate this, but the power plays were somewhat lopsided in the first period, right? You had 3 straight power play opportunities for Tampa Bay. So you know what's going to happen. It's a no-brainer. You know what's going to happen. Dallas is going to get some in the second period. And that's what they did. It actually started at the end of the first. As Andre Palat was called for interference, that carried over into the second period. Lightning actually got a 4th power play opportunity early in the second with the interference call on Blake Como for a pretty bad hit on Alex Killorn, a late hit, which is why it was interference on Killorn. So that was wiped out, though, as Nikita Kucherov took a tripping penalty, and then here came the parade of the box, because starting with that carryover with about 15 seconds to go, Dallas had the next 4 power play opportunities. Yanni Gourde was called for cross-checking because he went after Jamie Oleksiak for a hit on Blake Coleman. Here's 5'7", 5'8", Yanni Gourde going after 6'5", 6'6", Jamie Oleksiak, and he gets called for cross-checking. Then you have Andre Palat called for a slash where, again, you know, guys have to be a little bit harder on their stick sometimes. It's you know, the slashing call is only supposed to be automatic if you break the stick, right? You know, and Palat got the stick around the hands, but Pavelski dropped his stick. I mean, Pavelski's a better player than that. He's a strong player. The referee should understand that and know that, right? But it was called, gave Dallas another power play. And then you have the situation where Pat Maroon was called for goalie interference, and then there was matching roughing calls. So Dallas got the next 4 power play opportunities. You knew it was coming, and they took advantage of it. They get the Joel Pavelski goal on the last one, the Maroon interference call, but they built momentum off of it, right? They ended up with 18 shots in that second period, and 10 of those came on the power play. You know, the even strength shots during the second were 8-4 for Dallas. So it's double the amount, but it's not a crazy margin. But that's because there was only 11 minutes and 29 seconds of even strength play. The rest of it was on the power play. Dallas had over 6.5 minutes of power play time, end up with 11 shot attempts and 10 shots on goal. So there's a disparity. That's why there was such a huge gap, because Dallas had the 4 power play minutes or the 4 power play opportunities and, you know, over 6 minutes of power play time. And that's also because the 4th power play was so short because they scored right off the draw. So second period wasn't dominated necessarily by Dallas, but they had the power play opportunities, and that made it look a little you know, worse than it was, because even, you know, on all situations, it was 23-17 in favor of Dallas, but 13-12 in favor of Tampa at 5-on-5 play. So again, I said it in the series against Boston in particular, and in a lot of ways, a series against the Islanders too, keep it 5-on-5, Tampa Bay has a better chance to win the game. Yeah, you'd like to finish scoring their power play goal, and they did tonight, but you keep it 5-on-5, you like Tampa Bay's chances, because this is what happened in the third. Yes, Dallas cut the lead to 3-2. So it kind of gives this illusion that Dallas was pushing hard. Dallas was not pushing hard. And in fact, Tampa Bay did so many good things in this period. You know, getting pucks out of the zone for the most part. A couple of scrambling moments that you're going to have because, you know, that's another good team out there. You know, so Dallas is going to have their push. And they had some of them. But for the most part, the Lightning controlled this period. Like, the stats are going to bear this out because the 5-on-5 shot attempts were 22-11 in favor of Tampa Bay, so double the amount. The shots on goal were 12-4 in favor of Tampa Bay. That's 75% of the shots. And the scoring chances were 8-5, and they limited Dallas to one high danger chance after they had 7 in the first two periods. Yeah, and this is all 5-on-5. So 5-on-5 play, after giving up 7 high danger chances in the first two periods, they only had Dallas only had 1. I think the Tampa Bay defended this period really, really well. Got a little hairy a couple of times because Dallas did catch Tampa Bay in a line change to score their second goal. And it's a 3-on-2 rush that was actually caught up to. The Lightning actually recovered okay on this. The problem was is that you had John Klingberg, a right-handed shot on the right-handed side of the ice, is able to find Matthias Janmark. Because Kevin Shattenkirk did not play it very well, and he owned up to it in the post game. He says he has to be better there. He knows that. And what happened there is he caught hesitating. You don't want to hesitate. You don't want to get caught in between. And that's what happened. Either you take the puck, take away the passing lane, or tie the man up. And Shattenkirk, as soon as Shattenkirk turned to try and find Janmark behind him, he's dead to rights. Because Klingberg sees that. And Janmark already has a stick down on the ice. All Klingberg has to do is find the stick, and he did. It's an easy backdoor tap-in. So Shattenkirk has to be, you know, what's the old saying? You take the body or you take the man. You can't take both sometimes. And well, Janmark didn't have the puck, so you can't take it there. But in that situation, to help out your goaltender, you got to either tie the man up, so completely just turn yourself around and make sure you know where the man is, or put yourself into a position where you can block the shot attempt. And he did neither. So the third period is going to look a little bit more hairy than it did. And look, Dallas almost tied it because Jamie Benn had an open look from the top of the left circle. And I think Andrei Vasilevskiy got just enough of a piece of it, maybe with the shaft of his stick, and the puck sailed high. That was Dallas's best chance to tie the game. But otherwise, puck was down on the Dallas end quite a bit. Tampa Bay was doing a good job of understanding when to get the puck in deep, when to forecheck when you got the puck in deep, and how to keep it in there. They cycled it rather well down low. They cycled it pretty well up high. They actually scored a fourth goal in this game because of a high cycle. Now, it was called back on an offside call, which was the right call. Blake Coleman wasn't quite behind the line. He was ahead, just ahead on the entry. You know, that was a pretty clear one, not as clear as the Cedric Paquette offside goal against the Islanders in the Eastern Conference Final, but it was certainly offside, and that's now the third goal in these playoffs that Tampa Bay has had taken off the board because of an offside call. Remember, you had the one in Game 2 against the Bruins where Braden Point wasn't quite out of the zone before Barclay Goodrow entered and wiped off a Goodrow goal off the board in that game, and then the pretty egregious one that Carter Verhaeghe scored a goal on when Cedric Paquette was a good 5 feet inside the zone. So other than that, again, just control play in this period, and you have to be very impressed. You know, this is a team that we questioned in the past about how could they close out games, how would they defend, can they defend? You know, we know how much they are an offensive juggernaut, but can you defend? And that's the question, and that's what the players have been challenged to do by the coaching staff. And tonight is another example to show you how far they have gone, how far they've come, because here you have it. They closed out a Stanley Cup final game, and it was huge. It was huge. They needed to even the series. You have it now as a best of five, and you like the chances. Again, I think Tampa Bay is the better team in this series as a whole. Keep it 5-on-5. I like it even better. And now here we are, 1-1. Series tied, heading to Game 3. Pivotal Game 3, you're going to hear that quite a bit, but you have Game 3 now coming up on Wednesday.
Don't be left out. Make sure you subscribe to the Lightning Insider on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else where podcasts are found. Now, here again is Eric.
A couple of other notes from today. The lineup changes. We'll get into those a little bit, but obviously Jan Rutta entered in. Tampa Bay went back to a 12-6, dressed 12-6 as opposed to 11-7, so 12 forwards and 6 defensemen. Luke Shen was out of the lineup. Zach Bogosian was out of the lineup. Jan Rutta were in, and so was Carter Verhaeghe. It's the first time they've gone 12-6 since the first game against Boston back in round 2. John Cooper, by the way, just to clear this up, was asked after the game, you know, were they unfit to play or were they coach's decision? And he kind of dodged it a little bit because it was you were asking questions about two players. And he did say that's hard for me to answer that. But he was pressed on it again at the end. And he said that one was a coach's decision and one was unfit to play. It's not too hard to figure out which was which here because Luke Shen, remember, left game one for a period of time after taking a hit. So he is obviously the unfit to play because Zach Bogosian was on the ice for the morning skate. I was out there late with the scratches, so it's pretty obvious that he is the healthy player, and that one was for sure the coach's decision. So that's why they went to 12-6. And you know, Jan Rutta, I thought, was okay. He didn't really hurt them. He had some scrambly minutes early on in the game, which is to be expected. He hasn't played a game. Remember, he played game 2 of the round robin and was injured in that game, was not able to come back until tonight, even though John Cooper had said, interestingly enough, that he'd been healthy for a couple of weeks now. But they'd been playing so well with Shen as a seventh defenseman that they didn't want to change things up. And now you go back to a 6, and this puts Rutta, who played most of the season with Victor Hedman, back in that situation. And we saw some moving around of the pairs, right? Like we did see it because they started the game with Mikhail Sergachev and Eric Chernak as the opening pair of defensemen. So they definitely changed things around a little bit. Jan Rutta actually ended up playing most of his minutes tonight with Victor Hedman. He played 8.5 minutes paired with Victor Hedman at 5-on-5. So that's not to be unexpected. Again, played okay, didn't play lights out, which, you know, he's not asked to play lights out. He's asked to play steady. I think he has a better first pass than Bogosian. I think he's a little bit of a better skater than Zach Bogosian. So if you feel that Bogosian struggled with the pace of the game in game one, of course, he was the one that went into the corner to stand up for Braden Point that left the middle of the ice open that led to the first goal for Dallas. So I don't know if that factored into the decision or not. I know John Cooper has mentioned it, I think, once or twice about how that was a mistake done for the right reasons, but it was still a mistake. You know, and look, when you lose a game, sometimes you need to shake things up a little bit. Didn't shake up the lines. Carter Verhaeghe came in and just slotted back in on the fourth line with Pat Maroon and Cedric Paquette. So nothing really was shaken up, you know, but we did see the line combinations moved around, not the, the defensive pairings were certainly moved around a little bit here as Eric Chernak actually played 12 minutes with Mikhail Sergachev, and that left Ryan McDonough and Kevin Shattenkirk to play together, and they actually played almost 10 minutes together. So it changed the pairings around a little bit and changed the complexion, but I think the forwards needed it. I think the forwards have played a lot of taxing minutes throughout a good portion of this playoffs, especially in the latter stages. You think they played, you know, 3 multiple overtime games. They played 2 overtime games last week against the Islanders, and then you had the one game where they finished with 9. You know, it just kind of gave an opportunity to keep things maybe a little bit fresher for the Lightning forwards. And one other note to pass along, the NHL did make their awards announcements today. Victor Hedman and Andrei Vasilevskiy were up for awards. Hedman was up for the Norris. He actually finished 3rd in the voting. Roman Josi won it. John Carlson finished 2nd. Victor Hedman finished 3rd. And then Andrei Vasilevskiy was up for the Vezina Trophy. That was won by Connor Hellebuck of the Winnipeg Jets. Tuukka Rask finished second, and of course, Vasilevskiy finished third. The Norris is voted on by the Professional Hockey Writers Association, the PHWA. The Vezina is voted on by the general managers, so there's a smaller voting pool for the Vezina as compared to some of the other awards, but those were the award winners. Now, both Victor Hedman and Nikita Kucherov were voted second-team All-Star for their respective positions, so Hedman at defense and, of course, Kucherov at right wing. So that was the NHL awards were handed out tonight, and those were the players that were up for awards. All right, let's get to the questions. Gone on here long enough, rambled on, certainly plenty about what we saw here in Game 2. But before we get to that, here's the trivia question. Don't forget, this is for a T-shirt courtesy of Smack Apparel. It's a free Party Like It's 2004 blue shirt, if you've seen the pictures of Joyce, who sent it out, and then Matthew, yours is on the way. I have supplied them your address, so you should be getting it hopefully by the end of the week. So Matthew was our last winner. Sorry, Joyce and Matthew, you're not eligible for this one around. We want to give somebody else an opportunity to do it. So here is your trivia question. I want to know, it's a two-part question, and it involves Ruslan Fedotenko. Ruslan Fedotenko, of course, we all remember the two goals in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final against the Calgary Flames and what that meant to give them the cup that year. That's not the question, but it does involve Ruslan Fedotenko. Two things I want to know about Ruslan Fedotenko. Number one, what team did Tampa Bay acquire Fedotenko from? And the second part of that question is, how many goals did he finish with in that playoff year in 2004? So again, your question is, how many or what team did Tampa Bay acquire Ruslan Fedotenko from? And then how many goals did he finish with in the 2004 playoff year? So that's your two-part question. This is how you can get your questions to me. Easiest way is to send me a direct message via Twitter. My handle is Eric_Erlandson, Eric_ERLENDSSON. That's the easiest way for me to get them. And then you can also email me. It's Eric@LightningInsider.com. That's Eric@LightningInsider.com. But of course, the easiest way is to find me on Twitter with a direct message. And again, the question for the last time is, what team was Ruslan Fedotenko acquired from, and how many goals did he finish the 2004 playoff season with? So two-part question. Also, if you're not a subscriber to my website, if you go to lightninginsider.com and you use the coupon code PODCAST when you sign up for a yearly subscription, I'll give you $10 off your first year. So that's PODCAST in the coupon code if you are not yet a subscriber to my site. All right, to the questions, because as usual, you guys have some really good ones, and I want to get to all of them as I can, and I'm scrolling further and further and further back because this is great. This is great. Some of these are actually from before I even started asking for them. So this is great, guys. I really appreciate this. Hopefully I won't go too long from it. This is from Pat, who actually sent this in after listening to the most recent podcast. Why is Mikhail Sergachev getting so many first power play minutes? Lightning are showcasing him for an offseason trade. No one wants Johnson or Killorn at their money, and they can't pay them all. Also recoups a number one pick, and Foote comes in next year. What say you, Eric? And he says, by the way, I'm not saying I like this potential move, but it seems more realistic than being able to trade one of the 5 million no-trade clause gang. Well, first of all, you don't showcase a player in the playoffs. You are trying to win, especially in the Stanley Cup Final. You're not showcasing players. Sergachev is a prime candidate for a offer sheet as a restricted free agent because of the cap issues that Tampa Bay does have. You know, it'd be easy to kind of pluck him out. And the offer sheet thing is too, they're more myths. I know they happen. We saw one last year with Sebastian Aho. Montreal tried to sign him, but especially in this climate, in this financial climate, the amount of money it would take for a team to sign a player to an offer sheet, not just the money commitment, but you have to have the draft picks too, because you're going to sign to, in order to be able to acquire a player via this method, you're going to have to sign them to a lot of money, which is going to cost you as many as 5 first-round draft picks. So I know the offer sheet situation is out there, but it's a very unknown financial climate right now because of COVID, and we don't even know when the season's going to start. We don't know when or if fans are going to be allowed into the stands, so there's a lot of question marks. But at the end of the day, you're not showcasing a player in the playoffs. I get the thought process, Pat, but it's not something that I can think of, would be the case here. He's getting first power play minutes because he's eventually going to be a number one quarterback. I don't know why they kept forcing it here in this situation. I certainly like the idea of Victor Hedman, especially with the way he's played in this postseason, to run the power play, but here we are. From Mike, part of the Stars' game plan is to wear out their opponents. It's a game. Look, Calgary tried to do it. The Tampa Bay in 2004, they tried to out-hit them, and after every game that Calgary lost, they would try and take a physical toll out of you at the end of the game as well. So it's not necessarily a bad philosophy or a bad approach. You just have to be disciplined about it, and the referees have to call it if you're crossing that line. From Jay, when 3 guys go to the penalty box at the same time, who gets released at the end of the power play? I was surprised by this one because it was actually Hedman that was the guy out of the box when the penalties ended, because usually the guys with the matching minors are the guys that stay in the box, and he did have the matching minors. It was Paquette and Hedman got the matching roughing calls during that little flare-up, and then Corey Perry and John Klingberg were the 2 Dallas guys, and Maroon was getting the initial call. So I don't know if the team can designate who comes out of the box. It has to be what the case is. They probably have to say, okay, who's the designated player that can come out of the box in that situation? Because it was Hedman that came out. This is a good one from Robert, and I told him to tag it, and I would answer it here on the podcast. So why does it seem to be the Lightning's play defaults to passive chip-ins once they have the lead? It's infuriating and confusing. It's a smart play, because what you don't want to do is put yourself into a position where you're turning too many pucks over at the blue line. When you're protecting the lead, you don't want to feed the other team and cut the ice in half for them. If you continue to try and rush the puck in too often and try and make plays as you cross the blue line, you're setting yourself up for possible turnovers, and then you're caught and you go the other way. That's when you give up odd man rushes. That's something that Tampa Bay has been guilty of throughout the past number of years, right? So when you are chipping it in, look, if the play is there, and we saw it in the third period tonight, if the play is there, they're going to take it. We saw them create a couple of times off the rush, even in the third period tonight. But if it's not there, chipping it in is the absolute best play, because then you can get in a forecheck. And then even if you can't recover the forecheck, you're forcing Dallas to come 200 feet as opposed to 150 or 125, right? So that's why it's a strategy that a lot of teams do. That's why you see them a lot of times with the puck in their own zone. They'll flip it out, right? They'll just sky it so it can't be gloved down or anything else, so it gets out of the zone and you can reset. And that's what it's all about. You don't want to let teams have sustained pressure when you're trying to protect the lead. So sometimes a smart play, it's the equivalent of trying to bank the puck high off the glass and get it out of the zone. So those are just smart defensive plays that a lot of teams do when they're protecting the lead, and that's why they do it. Chip-ins are never a bad play when you're protecting a lead. From Paul, this isn't so much a question, but I just wanted to get your opinion on the second period game management. It's penalty problems. That's what it was all about. It was penalty problems. That's what cost them. That's what put them in that position, feeding into Dallas and giving them life by giving them power play opportunities. So you saw what happened when they come back in the third. From Michael, Shattenkirk did not have a very good game. Well, he ended up with a game-winning goal. I know he had a rough game. He didn't do a very good job on the goal, didn't tie up Janmark and didn't take away the passing lane. He had a clear attempt that was disrupted that might have actually led to that Jamie Benn opportunity. You know, but besides that, I wouldn't say he had a rough game. You know, there are certain things that stand out, you know, when you're evaluating because of what they led to. You know, but look, I mean, his play, his defensive play has never been his strength. He's not that kind of a defenseman. He can play some of those minutes, but you're not asking Kevin Shattenkirk to be a defensive defenseman, right? His game is getting up the ice, moving the puck, and being that type of a defenseman. But, you know, he did end up having the game-winning goal in the third period. The other part of the comment here from Michael, when are the Lightning going to be conscious of being inside? It may eventually cost them, and I can save on my blood pressure medication. Look, sometimes guys just make bad plays, and sometimes guys make good plays. There's no such thing as a perfect game from a perfect player, right? It just doesn't happen. This is Lightning FCB. Do you think they've been focusing on the power play more during practice? He's got two screenshots here from the first and the second goal. Look almost the same, but on the second one, Point let the puck go through to Palat. Looks like, yeah, look, they work on these plays. There's no doubt they work on these plays. And again, if you look at the first goal, like you have the screenshots up, and you can find it in my mentions or use the, you know, find it during on the Ask EE hashtag. You can see clearly on the first one, Braden Point is in that soft spot, right? You look at him, he's right in the middle of the box, and he's got time and space for Kucherov to get him the puck, and he's able to get the bumper play off. On the second one, Point's a little bit more covered. You see the, you know, the guy in the high left side of the box, if you're facing the goal, is drawn to Point. So he's trying to take away that pass. That's what opened up the seam. You know, that's what Point knows he's got the pressure behind him, and he also knows he's got Palat behind him. I don't know if that was called out. I don't know if there's communication on the ice, but there's no doubt they work on these plays in practice all the time. From Przemek, my hot take, we play 12-6 tonight because Stamkos is coming back. I think Kucherov will be top five, at least top 10 best passer in NHL history when he tires. He is a magician. He is a wizard. Let's go one higher step up from a magician. He is a wizard with the puck. The assist he had, actually wasn't even an assist, it was his own goal, but the play he made against the Islanders in game one was just ridiculous. He is absolutely, the two passes he made tonight, the ones we just talked about, he is fantastic. As far as a Stamkos situation, we'll see. I think Steven Stamkos is going to play in the series at some point. I don't know if it'll be Wednesday. I don't know if it'll be Friday or Saturday. He's going to play at this point. I know a lot of people have mentioned that it's got to be game five because it'll be the second half of back-to-back. Well, now we know we have a game five, but it'll be interesting to see. But I do get the feeling and the sense, and call it instinct, I think he's playing in this series. From Brown Crow, you think Cooper goes 12-6 again, or was this due to Bogosian and or Shen being banged up? We answered that one. Didn't think Carter did anything tonight. Was this just Cooper preparing for the return of the Jedi? Parentheses, stammer. Well, Carter Verhaeghe would have had an assist. he would have had an assist on the Sergachev goal that was called off for the offside. But, you know, he didn't hurt them. You know, he didn't play a ton of minutes tonight. He doesn't kill penalties, so he kind of sat on the bench for a good portion of the second period, only ended up with 7 minutes of ice time, only had the one shot attempt, but he had two blocked shots. You know, did he have an impact on the game? Not a huge impact at all, but, you know, he's a guy who can bring speed. He can generate speed. We saw that, I think, in the series against the Islanders. And look, this is great experience no matter what for Carter Verhaeghe because of the cap situation that this team is going to find themselves in next season. You can count on Carter Verhaeghe being a top nine, I think, on this team moving forward. And to, you know, I mentioned he sat a lot in the second period. He only played a minute 24 in the second. You know, sometimes when that happens, you kind of lose your legs a little bit. He was actually on the ice for... They haven't listed on the ice for the goal, but of course it was pulled back. It didn't hurt them. Didn't stand out, but that's not necessarily a bad thing either. From Lee, and I'll toss in JT on this question too, because it's in regards to the Ben hit on Kucherov. Looked to me like he was targeting the head. It looked to the head. It looked blindside to me. I haven't received any word tonight. My guess is because this is the Stanley Cup final, nothing's going to happen. I think it should. I think it's definitely something to be flagged at. I was trying to find a video of it. I have not seen a good look of it other than the still shot that JT sent me. So I would say under normal circumstances, yes. I don't know if the league has the guts, for lack of a better phrase, to suspend Jamie Benn, the captain of the Dallas Stars, for a Stanley Cup final game for a hit. I hate to say that, but I know how this league operates. From Bob, were you concerned that the Bolts got into the penalty problems in the second period, kind of open up the door for the Stars, who have a decent power play? Vasilevsky looked strong and thought the defense also stepped up. Just watch for penalties. Yeah, it fueled Dallas's comeback attempt, right? It got them back in the game. Some of that, though, to me, too, is officiating to the score. You've heard me talk about that before. It's officiating to the score, and I hate that tactic that a good number of referees do. I hate it. But I told you, the Lightning got the first three power plays. So what happened? Dallas got five of the next six. It's so predictable in the NHL. It really is. From Mark, hi from Barcelona. Did the game plan change at all with the 12-6? Do you think the Lightning played better, same, or worse with this rotation? Also, was Ruda a coach decision or Bogo and Shen hurt again? Shen, I'm pretty sure, was the guy that was hurt. Bogosian was on the ice this morning. I'm going to guess he was the coach's decision. As far as the 12-6, again, I thought that eventually they were going to have to go back to this just to give the forwards a little bit of time, so they're not so taxed, right? Like, these are heavy, hard minutes, and maybe that played into why they had so many, why the tired legs, part of the tired legs, on top of course, the amount of hockey that they've played. So I don't think it changed the game plan at all. It probably made Todd Richards' life a little bit easier in trying to call out the defensive pairings for the game. It probably made John Cooper's life a little bit easier too, because you just kind of roll the four lines and then you don't have to worry about who's going out with Paquette and Maroon and kind of keep track of that. Mike Bucetta did clarify himself. He said, let me clarify, comment on Shattenkirk. He had a goal, but very weak on defense. Yeah, he was. He admitted it, and he knows it. From Volti, also asked about the hit on Kucherov by Ben. I mean, obviously, if he played for Tampa Bay, he'd get three games in a game misconduct as well as 10 hours of community service. That's pretty funny. It's a good chance. Again, as I just said, knowing this league, knowing how they operate, it's probably not even going to get a hearing, which, you go back to 2011, there were two situations that warranted something from the NHL in the Eastern Conference Finals, where I think it was Milan Lucic sucker punched Victor Hedman at the end of game two. There was nothing for it, not even a fine, not anything. And the other one was coming off the ice from game six that was here in Tampa. Nathan Horton squirted water at a fan. It's supposed to be an automatic suspension. I mean, it's automatic. It's in the books. It's written in the books. But they didn't have the guts to stand by that rule and suspend Nathan Horton for game seven. And guess who scored the game-winning goal in game seven? It was Nathan Horton. I was surprised. In 2000 and I think it was 2015, first round against Detroit, that Nicholas Cronwall was actually suspended for game seven for a hit he delivered on Nikita Kucherov. I was surprised that that happened. So you don't see it very often in critical games. It's just hard for me to see them suspending Jamie Benn. Not that it's not deserved. For a Stanley Cup final. From Brown Crow, do you think finishing third in the Vezina voting motivated Vasilevsky? I've been a little critical of him. I know his numbers are great, but he's been outplayed by lesser goalies in these playoffs. Thought he was fantastic tonight. Hope we see that from here on out. The opposing goalies have looked better than maybe they are because of the shot volume that they've had to face from Tampa Bay. So, I mean, Korpisalo in the first round. I don't think Jaro Halak was all that great in round two. He had his moments. Varlamov, again, was okay. He was pretty good in the conference finals, but I don't think you can sit here and say that Vasilevsky's been outplayed by any of those goalies. His numbers in these playoffs are fantastic. And I don't think finishing third is any sort of a motivation for him, right? Like, that's a quote-unquote regular season award, whereas, you know, he's trying to win a Stanley Cup. So I don't think that finishing third motivated him all tonight. He's been great in these playoffs. I mean, you think of some of the stops he made, the shorthanded stop on Brock Nelson in Game 6 against the Islanders. He had Matt Barzal on a breakaway in Game 5 in overtime. I mean, he's come up with some really big saves. It's just that he doesn't have to stand on his head. Sometimes the goalies that Tampa Bay face have to stand on their head. From Ryan, I'm one of the ones usually ripping on Tyler Johnson. He was great tonight. Had some key blocks. Great play. The whole second line came to play. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on John Cooper? He usually gets most of the scrutiny, but I feel his adjustments were key tonight. He gets scrutiny because he hasn't won with this group, right? And it's not unwarranted. I'm not saying it's unwarranted. And he's learned his lessons along the way as well. I think that this entire year has been John Cooper's best coaching job because of integrating new players and getting the players to buy into a different mentality in, guiding them through those early season struggles, which, geez, were so long ago at this point, but they struggled in the first half of the year to send them down the line to the second half of the season that they had. I mean, they had a 10-game winning streak. They had an 11-game winning streak. They won 21 out of 24 games at one stretch. And then to refocus this team for this pause and get them ready and not let things bother them. You know, I go back again to Julien Brisebois' phrase, and, you know, embrace the suck and dance in the rain. You know, like tonight, they didn't let the fact that fourth goal got taken off the board for an offside bother them. Just like they didn't let it bother them in game two against the Bruins when they had a tying goal taken off the board for an offside challenge. Right? It's a different mentality. So he's made some pretty good adjustments. I mean, going to the 7-11, I know he's done it before, but they haven't done it much this year at all. Like, at all. A few times here and there. But to do it in the playoffs, you know, it was fueled by, of course, Nikita Kucherov or Ryan McDonagh being injured. But to do it, again, I think he's made some pretty good adjustments in this playoffs. As far as Tyler Johnson, yeah, I mentioned it, after game one, how alive that Cirelli, Killorn, Johnson line looked, and Johnson's a part of it. He was active. The whole line was active for the most part throughout this game. And then you look at the numbers at the end of the night. Tyler Johnson had four hits. He only had three shot attempts, but they had some really good cycles down low. He won 7 of his 11 faceoffs, so 64% of his faceoffs. You know, Killorn ends up playing 20 minutes. It's because, you know, the shorthanded time and the power play time, he's at 13 minutes of even strength ice time. And then Cirelli, ends up with an assist and, five hits, 17 minutes of ice time. And he won actually 8 of 11 faceoff. Interesting that those two guys were on the line, some of them shorthanded power play, whatnot, but they end up winning 15. They end up going 15-7 in the faceoff circle for Tampa Bay. So I thought the whole line was good. I thought Tyler Johnson was engaged. I think the whole line has looked good here in the first two games of this series. Also from Mike, Keith Jones thought the Lightning only played well in the first period and didn't deserve to win. Lightning didn't. Yeah, I heard that. Then what did Dallas play? I guess he didn't watch the third period. Tense game, yes, but Lightning controlled the third. Absolutely. Also from Mike, Vasilevsky was outstanding, especially a couple breakaway saves. Yeah, the stop on Cogliano in particular. From Evgeny, were you surprised that Cooper said Ruda's been healthy for weeks now? No one asked him about him during media availability, and boom, he plays in the Stanley Cup Finals. Why do you think they put him in there so unexpectedly over Bogosian? How do you assess this game tonight? We've talked about it a little bit. Yeah, we haven't talked. Look, it's difficult in some ways in this setting to ask questions about particular players, especially Ruda, because the defense has been playing so well. We're limited in the time, And sometimes you only get one question. Certain outlets get two, but most outlets only get one question. And if you're trying to look for a certain storyline, it's hard to quote unquote waste your question on whether or not Jan Rutta is injured. I was hoping that they would find a way to let us know when that happened. From ARNDTJC, will we see 91 at some point in the series? Yep, I talked about that a little bit earlier. From Stephanie, was injury the reason Cooper went 12-6? Was he trying to change the lineup and give a spark? I think it's a little bit of both. We mentioned, I think Luke Shen was the guy that was injured based on John Cooper's comments after the game. You know, but I think they were just trying to look to kind of shake things up too. And again, trying to give the forwards a little bit of a rest. From Kenny, how much of the second period officiating was to even up the power plays? Dallas took a lot of dumb calls in the first. Then the refs started making soft calls against Tampa in the second. Officiating the score, I hate it. I hate to say it. I hate to mention that. But it's a fact in the NHL. It's a fact in the NHL. Look, we saw it earlier in this playoffs, right? When Columbus was trying fighting for their lives, I think they had a huge disparity. The series went 19-10. Columbus had 19 power play opportunities. Columbus had 10. You know, but sometimes, yeah, there's no doubt officials officiate to the score. From Tony, thoughts on the 12-6 and how Rutta and Verhaeghe played. Interesting that Boga was scratched. Hoping this is a warm up for 91's return. Yeah, we did talk about a lot of those. From Ant Verdi, I know hockey is physical, but is it normal for announcers to cheer on targeting injured players? Seemed archaic. I hate the idea. I hate the idea with a passion. You know, and then for NBC to advocate, even tonight, okay, Tampa Bay just won Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final. They even up the series. They get two power play goals. They control the third period. What's the first question Brian Boucher asks Andre Palat? Another game where there's a combined 100 hits. Are you guys okay to handle this physical toll? Like, why is that the main talking? I can't imagine that's not being brought up on purpose, because every single analyst for NBC brings it up, the physical toll. I mean, the Lightning, and they're talking about how physical Dallas is. Well, the Lightning have actually had more hits. It's been pretty even, but the hits have been, you know, not one-sided, so it's not like Dallas is completely wiping Tampa Bay off physically. Tampa Bay is matching it. Can we stop talking about that? I don't get it either. I wish I knew the answer. Last two here from AJ. What are the chances Ben gets a call from player safety? Talked about that. Why doesn't the NHL do a better job of protecting star players? I don't mean NBA-level favoritism, but hits like that shouldn't go uncalled on anyone, let alone the rating MVP. I agree. They keep talking about wanting to get headshots out of the game, and you know, you see a play like that that goes uncalled. Again, I want to see a replay of it. I have not seen a full replay of it yet, so I definitely want to see that. But it certainly looked like it from my vantage point watching it live the first time that it was a pretty dangerous hit. I thought it was from blindside pressure as well, which should check off more than a couple of boxes, but I don't think it's going to get anything. I hate to say that, but I really don't think it's going to get anything from player safety. And again, I've talked about this before. I don't know why the NHL doesn't allow or doesn't protect their star players. The star players drive the game. It's not Ryan Reeves. It's not Cal Clutterbuck that drive the game. It's the stars. So I'm not saying you have to go out of your way and you know, make up rules like in football to protect the stars, you know, the quarterbacks in particular. But you have to do something to allow them to stay in the game. You can't allow teams to just continually go out of their way and target, sometimes illegally, these top players. I agree with you. I don't understand it. You know, and here's another thing, going back to the previous question from Ann Verdi about the physical play. Did you know Barclay Goodrow had 12 hits in game one? But nobody talked about it. Cal Clutterbuck does that. It's a huge topic of conversation. Barclay Goodrow does it. No big deal. Again, I guess I'm trying to fuel some of the NBC dislike here from a lot of you. But I agree with the AJ. I don't know why there's not more to protect some of the stars in this league. From Palatitude, what can the Lightning do to score more at 5-on-5 in the series? Only two total goals at evens through two games. Look, I'm not getting concerned about that right now. Look, they won the game tonight. They won the special teams battle, and they evened it out at even strength. They got opportunities. You know, again, we'll look here at the numbers and what they tell us. You know, we talked about the number of shot attempts and all that. At even strength, the Lightning had a 20-17 advantage in scoring chances and an 11-8 advantage in high danger chances. Look, Dallas only scored one even strength goal tonight too. Right? They only scored the one. Nope, they scored two. No, they scored the one. Pavelski's was a power play goal. So, I'm not concerned about their lack of five. It kind of comes and goes a little bit. There's no doubt they have to get inside the defense just like they did, you know, against the Islanders, just like they did against the Bruins. They have to do more of that. But it's not time to be overly concerned with their 5-on-5 goal production, because they've been getting 5-on-5 scoring chances. And this team is pretty good that eventually they're going to start to go in. And let's face it, I don't think Anton Hudobin can play out of his mind this entire series to make that happen. All right, that's going to wrap it up. Boy, we went long today. Longest show yet, but that's because of your great questions. And plus, hey, it's a Stanley Cup final. Don't forget the trivia question. DM me your answers. We'll get a winner here in a couple of days, depending on how many entries we get. So make sure you get that question and the answer to me so you can be entered in the contest. We'll be back after Wednesday's game to recap game number three, pivotal game number three in the Stanley Cup final. Thanks, everybody, always for listening. Make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you review, especially the iTunes and the Apple 5-star reviews. They mean a lot. If you could just take a few minutes out of your day to do that when you get the podcast, I would really appreciate it. So until Wednesday, thanks, everybody.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.